Hey, Corey here. We've had an influx of new listeners, and so I just want to make sure that if you are new to the podcast, you don't just jump in and start listening to these daily episodes, which we've been doing. Please go back and listen to the first at least 8 episodes so you have an idea of what Collapse is, what it is that Corey is talking about. Also, if you've been with us for a while and you're enjoying the content, please join us on Patreon. We would love to see you there. There's a link, as always, in the description. By the time you're hearing this, the U.S. will have just experienced a record-breaking heat wave for the month of March, at least in most of the West. Meanwhile, the eastern United States is continuing to experience chaotic weather from storms and freezing temperatures. We knew it was going to be hot. Today is Friday. It's the hottest moments right now and going into the weekend. But today it was announced that Arizona broke the record for hottest temperature ever in March, exceeding 110 degrees Fahrenheit. That's 43 plus degrees Celsius. Here in my area, we are approaching 75 to 80 degrees in a time when it should normally be in the upper 40s to maybe low 50s. CNN says the U.S. is on the verge of an all-time heat record for March. Yes, it's climate change. Meanwhile, The Guardian similarly says heat waves scorching U.S. West, virtually impossible without climate crisis, says scientists. Unreasonably warm and even dangerous temperatures this week were up to 30 degrees Fahrenheit above average for the time of year. I know I can personally say I have never seen anything like this, and I am guessing that if you live in the West, you would attest to that. I'm going to read through a couple of these articles, and we're going to talk about maybe what this means for the rest of the year and this upcoming summer. The CNN article says, an unprecedented heat wave in the West is on the verge of breaking the record for the hottest March temperature anywhere in the United States, 108 degrees. A weather station near Martinez Lake, Arizona, posted a high temperature of 110 degrees on Thursday, which some media outlets reported as the record breaker, but that weather station is a temporary one and not quality controlled for accuracy, according to the National Weather Service. So I guess in that, me saying that we hit 110 may not be completely accurate, simply because that weather station is not controlled by the National Weather Service. That said, it says the Martinez Lake temperature won't be deemed a new national March heat record unless the National Centers for Environment Information decides to investigate it. The nationwide record was at least preliminary tied on Thursday afternoon. Both Indio and Thermal California hit 108 degrees at permanent long-standing weather stations. It could all be a moot point as the scorching heat wave continues through the weekend, with temperatures expected to peak near the national record in Southern California or Arizona. An unusually strong and sprawling heat dome is the catalyst for the heat, but the magnitude is undoubtedly being worsened by planet-warming pollution. Heat waves are becoming more frequent, more severe, and lasting longer as the world warms. Climate scientists at World Weather Attribution published an analysis Friday that found this heat wave would be virtually impossible for this time of year in a world without human-induced climate change. Heat domes of this strength are rare this early in the year, and its arrival ahead of schedule could actually make it more dangerous. The early, prolonged nature of this heat with limited seasonal acclimation will increase the risk of heat impacts, especially among sensitive populations or those without effective cooling. Extreme heat is the deadliest form of extreme weather in the U.S., killing more than twice as many people each year on average as hurricanes and tornadoes combined. Okay, now before I go on with the article, I do want to mention something about that. Yes, from a human perspective, this is very dangerous. We often look at heat from the perspective of its effects on people and those vulnerable. And I hope that everyone in the West right now is able to have air conditioning, stay indoors as much as possible, or otherwise prepare for the heat. On top of that, though, one thing this article is not mentioning, and I think is crucially important, is the effect this has on an already terrible snowpack in the West. I know I go on about this a lot. I'm not going to go deep into it. But when you consider the already dismal conditions of snow in the West, and then put on top of that a massive heat dome that makes the temperatures 20 to 30 degrees warmer than usual, and you have a decimating effect on snowpack. One of my local ski resorts here, I'm a snowboarder. I mentioned that last week. They typically don't close down until mid-April or so. And they're just usually starting to get into sort of the spring ski season, and then into April, it starts to really to go away. Well, I was just looking into it, and it looks like they're already starting to close down some of their trails. It is 60 degrees today, on the mountain. When I went up snowboarding last week, or was it the week before now, I guess, they're already, like, the resort was the only place that there was snow because they were managing it. In the 3 minutes before hitting the resort, everything was empty and the surrounding mountains didn't have much snow on it. These highest peaks where they're able to, you know, there's still some snow left, these are the reserves that are typically left well into May, June, and July that feed down into the water systems that make their way to the Colorado River and other rivers that are feeding local agriculture and populations. We are not yet seeing the effect in the river levels. As a matter of fact, it might have an opposite effect right now. The rivers might be, you know, extraordinarily high. And this should be having an effect where it's filling Lake Powell, right, and Lake Mead, because all of that water is arriving down from the mountains. But that also means that snowpack, which was already 25 to 30% of normal, is going to melt early, and May, June, and July are now not going to see any new entries of water into the Colorado, or at least it will be severely reduced. Late summer is going to be a real doozy. Now, on that note also, it's not just about water that's making its way into the Colorado River, but what about the effect that this has on wildfires this summer? After a few regular years of snow, allowing for brush and trees and all of that to thrive in the mountains, you now have a year in which very little water into mid and late summer is going to be making it to these trees, to this brush, to this grass. And it's going to cause extremely dry conditions, dead vegetation, ripe for wildfires. And there is real possibility of experiencing just an intense amount of wildfire activity in the West this year. So multiple dangers all stacking up. Carrying on with the article, it does say, records are tumbling. More than 100 all-time March record highs were already broken or tied this week across several states in the West and High Plains, including California, Arizona, Colorado, Idaho, South Dakota, and Wyoming. And there's more to come. The summer-like temperatures are spiking 20 to 40 degrees above average, which has even broken all-time April records. So there is a whole list of a chart, essentially, that they've built here. Forecast temperatures for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday for different areas, showing what the previous records were and what the forecast is slated to be. Like they said, certain places are even breaking all-time high records for April in March. This is a really fascinating list to scroll through. It lists, I think, 100 different cities here. So feel free to, I'll link to it. It's a CNN article. Yeah, pretty fascinating to see. Some of the records that it talks about having broken: Phoenix soared to 102 degrees on Tuesday, easily besting its previous March record of 100. It shattered it again on Thursday with a high of 105, which even ties the April monthly record. A high of 84 in Flagstaff on Thursday shattered the previous March record by 11 degrees and bested its April record by 4 degrees. Denver, Vegas, Salt Lake City, Burbank, Fresno, and Palm Springs, California are some of the other cities where temperatures have toppled March heat records this week. Denver could even soar to near its April record of 90 degrees by Saturday. This heat dome is expected to move east from today through the weekend, probably into early next week. And I did notice, looking at local temperatures, they dip a little bit into the early week, but by Wednesday, they are back again, at least here locally, at almost the peak of where they are now. I don't know if it's going to be that way all over, if the heat dome is sticking around, or if it's just here that it's going to stay that high. And that then begs the question, what are we headed to this summer? Is this a moment in which we'll look back and say, wow, we had a really hot start to the summer, to the spring, and then we had an average summer? That is possible. Is it the most likely outcome? I think not. I think it is more likely that we experience intense heat. Why? Well, we're headed into an El Nino, and not just any El Nino, but a super El Nino. There is an article in The Atlantic titled, "There's No Way the American West Will Have a Normal Summer." The article talks about how this heat dome we're experiencing is not normal, at least it wasn't normal in the past. Talks about the heat wave is happening because of a bizarrely strong ridge of high pressure in Earth's atmosphere. They have a prediction model. Essentially, this is the nonprofit group called Climate Central, talking about how this current dome that we're experiencing is made five times more likely due to climate change, and that it's expected to have continued effects throughout the summer. another article from Wired is titled "Get Ready for a Year of Chaotic Weather in the U.S. A massive Western heat wave and a potential El Nino event raise concerns about a long stretch of unpredictable and extreme weather." I'm going to read a little bit of this article to end here. It says, "Despite being declared the third hottest year on record, 2025 was a relatively quiet year for climate disasters in the U.S. No major hurricanes made landfall, while the total number of acres burned in wildfires last year fell below the 10-year average," which, really quick, again, when you look at those types of numbers, that seems great, but you have to remember that this is cyclical. And everything that didn't burn last year or the year before that or the year before that has grown to a degree that it's primed itself to be burned once it dies. So if you have large swaths of the U.S. West that have grown and grown and grown, not being controlled by burns, then when they do inevitably hit a season like this one, where it dries up extensively, you're at a great risk for fire. It talks about heat for a bit. It talks about this dome. It talks again about water in the Colorado River and Lake Powell and Meade. And then it says this. It said, then there's the El Nino. Last week, the National Weather Service announced that there was more than a 60% chance that an El Nino event emerging in August or September. Various weather models suggest that this El Nino could be particularly strong, while we likely won't know for sure until summer. The fact that all the models are moving upwards is worth watching, says Zeke Hausfather, which we've quoted him very much on this podcast, a research scientist at Berkeley Earth. No one can predict for certain what impact exactly El Nino will have in the coming months. The phenomenon has a variety of effects on weather around the world. It's not always super consistent. Some areas get wetter and some areas get drier. However, this could potentially be good news for some areas in the Southwest that following a parched summer due to lack of snowpack need more water. But, says Swain, this is Daniel Swain, who we have also quoted much on the podcast, climate scientist at the University of California Agriculture and Natural Resources, he says an El Nino could also increase the chances of dry thunderstorms in some areas, which up the chance for wildfires from lightning in already dry terrain. During the last strong El Nino in 2016, heavy rain triggered mudslides in some areas of drought-stricken California. Heavy storms in areas affected by both wildfires and drought have been linked to increased likelihood of mudslides. Quote, people talk about climate chaos. I don't love the term in the context of climate change because we still have a very structured climate, says Swain. But a very strong El Nino event really does induce chaos. It induces patterns that are very different from typical historical norms. And there's no denying that human-caused climate change is upping the ante for heat increases from natural events like El Nino. Now, we'll do an episode on El Nino. We'll probably do many episodes on El Nino throughout the spring and summer as we get more news on this. I'm holding off a little bit on going into details just until we have more information about how strong it really is expected to be and how that could play out and impact summer weather. So anyway, this was focused obviously on the U.S. and the U.S. West, but there is just weather absurdity happening all over the world. I have talked to clients at work. I talked to clients all over Europe. And they have all described tales of very odd weather this winter and coming into spring. I know Australia has experienced some pretty wild weather recently. So something to watch out for, and just another bit of chaos to add to the mix of this sort of wild, chaotic world that we're living in and entering into. Thanks for being here. We'll see you tomorrow.
Hey, Corey here. If you are listening to the back catalog of Breaking Down Collapse, thank you. Those episodes are so vital. They're so important. But I also wanted to let you know that I am now doing daily episodes. Yes, that's right. Here on the podcast, daily episodes. So if you are enjoying the back catalog, great. Please also feel free to zoom forward to the most recent episodes. Catch us daily. They are quick little episodes, and I think you'll enjoy them. Thanks.